This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hello there, how are you? Welcome to Irish Time here on the Manawatu People's Radio. In Palmerston North. Sorry about that, a little hiccup with the technology. But anyway, happy St. Patrick's Day, because I'm recording this on Friday, St. Patrick's Day itself. You probably won't hear it until the middle of the week. But anyway, so we'll start off with a wee bit of, you know, St. Patrick's Day stuff, really. So what have we got here? The wearing of the green. The tradition of wearing shamrocks to celebrate St. Patrick's Day seems to date from the 17th or 18th century. These were very turbulent times in Irish history. The suppression of the Gaelic way of life by the ruling British invaders resulted in many aspects of the Catholic religion in Ireland being forced underground. You know, we used to have the hedgerow masses. Strict laws were enforced which prevented the Catholic population from attending schools, so hedge schools were operated in secret. It was illegal to even speak the language. These schools were run outdoors in secluded places, sometimes literally under a hedge. The teaching of religion was also forbidden, so it was only to be expected that teachers would use naturally available resources to inform their pupils. Thus, the shamrock plant was used to illustrate the message of the Christian Holy Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. St. Patrick was credited with using the shamrock in such a manner, so the wearing of the shamrock by the oppressed Catholic population became a means of demonstrating their defiance to the ruling British class. It also imbued a sense of kingship among the native Gaelic people, differentiating them from their oppressors. Wearing a clump of shamrock is now a firmly established tradition throughout the world to celebrate not just St. Patrick, but Ireland itself. The shamrock symbol is widely used by businesses seeking to associate with Ireland, and along with the harp, you know, the Irish harp, is perhaps the single most recognisable symbol of Ireland. It is a shame, though, that the shamrock is not a blue plant, as the colour originally associated with St. Patrick was blue. That was interesting. St. Patrick's Day is unique in that it is celebrated worldwide. It is most unusual that a country has such an international celebration, and it is really evidence of the generalisation efforts of immigration that has afflicted Ireland for centuries. Because the Irish are the most sort of, group of people that sort of spread around the world. The only people above them are the Jews, you know, for groups of people that actually moved away around the world. They're in every country in the world. They've got some sort of connection to, you know, and with the Jews, with their faith and their country, Israel, and along with the Irish and Ireland. After the 1845 to 1849 Irish famine, which was amazingly sort of damaging to the country and to the language, because most of the people that died were the poor and they were Irish speakers, and the language virtually disappeared. So as many as a million of native Irish left their homes for the decades after the famine to settle in places like Boston, New York, Newfoundland, Perth, Sydney, and beyond. The U.S. Census Bureau now reports that 34 million American citizens claim some sort of Irish descent. Most Americans like to commemorate their heritage, and thus the St. Patrick's Day Parade came into being. So the earliest of the St. Patrick's Day Parade was held in the year 1762, when Irish soldiers serving the British Army held a parade in New York City. Earlier records suggest that the day was celebrated by the Irish in Ireland as early as the 9th and 10th centuries. Again, this is a very difficult time in Irish history, with the Viking raiders terrorising the native Gaelic population. It is thus no surprise then that in times of strife, the local population would turn to religion and to a commemoration of their own heritage and individuality, a practice that has been repeated by populations of troubled places since the dawn of time, really. The New York Parade is now the largest running civil parade in the world. Wow. With as many as 3 million spectators watching the parade, over 150,000 participants. The first official parade in Ireland was in 1931. In 1901, law that copper fastened March 17th as a national Irish holiday was later amended to insist that public houses closed down for the day. I can remember that. Pubs used to be closed. And also, Good Friday, the pubs didn't open until 3 o'clock, and that's probably the same in St. Patrick's Day. This restriction was later lifted in the 70s. In the mid-1990s, the Irish government really started to promote the event. Well, when it changed from a single day's parade into a 5-day festival, attracting as many as 1 million visitors into the country. Parades are now held in just about every major city in the world, with the largest obviously in several American cities. The use of the colour green reached new heights or plunged new depths when in 1962 the city of Chicago decided to dye part of the Chicago River green. Since then, campaigns to have it just every possible landmark turned green for the day has taken off in earnest, and in recent years has included the Irish Parliament buildings near in Dublin, the Sydney Opera House, the Empire State Building, Niagara Falls, and even the pyramids of Giza in Egypt are all turned green, along with many other sort of monuments. I think Christ the Redeemer in Rio de Janeiro is green for the day, with lights. The Irish Association with drinking is well known, and not always positive. Fortunately, there are plenty of appropriate use of alcohol in St. Patrick's Day is one of them. It's widely held tradition in Ireland that beer or whiskey can be taken on St. Patrick's Day, although native pub goers can only look on aghast as visitors top the heads of their creamy pints of Guinness with a green shamrock. Sacrilege, it is estimated that as many as 13 million pints of Guinness are consumed on St. Patrick's Day, up from the usual 5.5 million. Isn't that an amazing amount of alcohol? The tradition of dressing up in Irish outfits is not just confined to participants in parades. Jovial creatures of Irish origin the world over use the opportunity of St. Patrick's Day to dress up as leprechauns or even as St. Patrick himself. Kids love to wear the big green, white and orange hats and receive sweets thrown to them by various people who are taking part in the parades and the floats. This is St. Patrick's Day dinner now. Corned beef and cabbage is as traditional an Irish meal as you will ever find and is often hauled out on St. Patrick's Day. Traditional Irish music in the background and a family gathering and other Irish St. Patrick's Day traditions have been going on for centuries. No, it's particularly the music. I love the music. The patron saint of Ireland, St. Patrick himself, was born in either a Scottish or an English family in the 4th century. He was captured as a teenager, Niall of the Nine Hostages, who was to become the king of all Ireland. He was sold into slavery in Ireland and put to work as a shepherd. He worked in terrible conditions for 6 years, drawing comfort in the Christian faith that so many of his people had abandoned under Roman rule. Patrick had a dream that encouraged him to flee his captivity and to head south where a ship was waiting for hire. He travelled over 200 miles from his northern captivity to Wexford, way down there in the south, where a ship was waiting to help him make his escape. Upon arrival in England, he was captured and returned to slavery, and he escaped after 2 months and spent the next 7 years travelling Europe seeking his destiny. During this time, he further educated his educational and studied Christianity in the Louvain Monastery, I think that's how you pronounce it, in France. He returned to England as a priest. Again, a dream greatly influenced him when he became convinced that the Irish people were calling out to him to return to the land of his servitude. He went to the monastery in France where it was decided that a mission should be sent to Ireland. Patrick was not selected for this task to his great disappointment. The monk that was selected was called Palladius, but he died before he could reach Ireland, and a second mission was decided. Patrick was made a bishop by the Pope in 432. Isn't that amazing? 432. And together with a small band of followers, traveled to Ireland to commence the conversion. Patrick confronted the most powerful man in Ireland, the High King of Tara, as he was known that he could, and he said that he could gain, he had to gain his support that would be safe to spread the word throughout Ireland of the Christian faith. To get his attention, Padraig and his followers lit a huge fire to mark their commencement of spring. Tradition had it that no fire should be lit under the king's fire was complete. But Padraig defied the rule and courted a confrontation with the king. The king rushed into action and travelled with the intention of making war on the holy delegation. Padraig claimed the king, with quiet composure, impressed the king that he had no other intentions than that of spreading the word of God, the gospel. The king accepted the missionary, much to the dismay of the Druids, who feared for their own power and position in the face of this new threat. They commanded that he would make snowfall. Padraig declined to do so, stating that this was God's work. Immediately it began to snow, and only stopping when Padraig blessed himself. Still trying to convince the king of his religion, Padraig grasped at some shamrock growing on the ground. He explained that there was but one stem on the plant, but the three branches of the leaves representing the Blessed Trinity. The king was so impressed with his sincerity and granted him permission to spread the word. Padraig and his followers were free to spread their faith throughout Ireland and did so to great effect. He drove paganism, symboled by the snake, from the lands of Erinna, Ireland. Padraig was tempted by the devil whilst on a pilgrimage at Craigpatrick. For his refusal to be tempted, God rewarded him with a wish. Padraig asked that the Irish be spared the horror of Judgment Day and that he himself be allowed to judge his flock. Thus, the legend that Ireland will disappear under a sea of water 7 years before the final, the final judgment was issued. Padraig died on March the 17th in the year 461 at the age of 76. It is not known for sure where his remains were laid, though Down Patrick in County Down in the north of Ireland is thought to be his final resting place. There's a big stone there in the grand, the cemetery, where I'm just saying with his name on it, Patrick. His influence is still felt to this day as nations the world over commemorate him on the 17th of March every year, because he was just, I see him as the patron saint of globalisation. Everyone's heard of St. Patrick. Everybody's Irish on St. Patrick's Day for whatever reason. And now to get on to something else here. This is James Martin, the boy from the Belfast Barista to Beverly Hills. This is a guy that won an Oscar the other night. It's not often that a Belfast barista gets serenaded by the glitterati of Hollywood. They all sang happy birthday to him because it was his birthday. Wasn't that really neat? But it's saying it's not often you win an Oscar and celebrate your birthday at the 95th Academy Awards. Cue James Martin, coffee connoisseur, soccer lover, and one of those rocking the night away with Sir Elton John at the Los Angeles after party. Martin, 31, is one of the stars of An Irish Goodbye. It's the name of the movie, An Irish Goodbye, which won an Oscar for the best live-action short film just weeks after it clinched one there at the BAFTAs. Filmed on location in Londonderry, Temple Patrick and Sainfield, Martin previously said an Oscar would put the icing on my birthday cake, and it sure did. The broadcaster, Ivan Martin, was told when his son was born with Down syndrome that he might never speak. But here we are, James not only speaks, once he started speaking, he wasn't able to shut up. What a journey he's had for the former pupil of Habenia Special School in Belfast. Yeah, Belfast. In 2020, he told the Disability Horizons Zealand that he had agreed to give it a go at a theatre group. I was very glad I went, as I got to meet Bridge Hawkins and her staff. Bridge was a great teacher who knew her stuff and inspired us all to improve our acting skills. We did all types of shows and I enjoyed every minute of it. From treading the boards in Belfast, Martin landed the lead role in the BBC drama Ups and Downs alongside actress Susan Lynch, written and directed by fellow Irishman Erin Cleland, who has a sister with Down syndrome. The film focuses on the story of a young man with Down syndrome wanting his own independence. He wants to get his voice to be heard, Martin told the BBC News in Northern Ireland. It makes him more open and honest with his family, and that's a good thing. Martin then went on to get a part in the ITV and Netflix drama Marcella. I think I've seen a bit of that, Marcella. But arguably his most high-profile acting job to date, certainly the one that has garnered the most publicity, is the movie An Irish Goodbye. Directed and written by Ross White, and Tom Berkeley. It tells the story of two estranged brothers who come together after their mother's death. The black comedy set on a rural farm sets Martin as Lochan alongside Seamus O'Hara, who plays his older brother. Ivan Martin said that everyone involved in the film had every right to be proud of themselves. It's won an Oscar, and not because James has Down syndrome. It's a damn good movie, and they all acted their socks off. Deservedly, it has been recognised. Ahead of the ceremony, James Martin showed up in a Los Angeles pub playing his harmonica for a rendition of Dirty Old Town in a jam session. Martin is also a ManCap ambassador in Northern Ireland and has previously said that having Down syndrome doesn't really hold me back. He told the BBC, it doesn't matter if you have Down syndrome as long as you're doing what you do. I do what I can and I try to be funny. I'm the first person with Down syndrome not just getting a BAFTA but also getting an Oscar, especially in, it was my birthday, which was just fantastic. It was unbelievable. His girlfriend, Barbara Norris, who's also ManCap ambassador, told BBC Northern Ireland, it was a magical moment and the icing on his birthday cake. It sure was. It shows to everyone that it's changing your mindset on how people with disabilities can achieve as much as they can as anybody else. Yes, good. I don't think if you've got any sort of disability, it should hold you back at all or be held against you. Martin is a keen runner and has previously taken part in park runs with the Falcons, a group of young adults with learning difficulties who are part of the Queen's Park Run community. I don't know if that's possibly part of the Queen's University in Belfast. He'll also be spotted at Irish League grounds on the weekend, football. Not rugby league, football. Martin's day job for the past year has been at Starbucks in Castle Lane and Victoria Square, as well as an Italian restaurant in South Belfast. His work colleague said he'd be very proud of his acting success, with good luck posters adoring the walls of his coffee chain store, where he was a barista. Isn't that neat? But having traded his green apron of Starbucks for a swanky leopard skin jacket at the Oscars, well, he'd be swapping the kitchen for the stage permanently. His dad said, despite the fame, he couldn't see his son leaving his jobs anytime soon, because he loved working with the public. And his father just said he could be more proud. What an achievement. I'm just delighted. I haven't been able to get to him. He was at the Elton John after party. He said his son tackles anything with great gusto, and that has now paid off. He loves the acting. He loved this ride with the Oscars and the BAFTAs. All I know is for James that he's very happy. And what more can you ask? Turned to her own model and actress Kate Grant, who also became the first model with Down syndrome to take part in the Belfast Fashion Week, was delighted with his award. And that is really good news. It really is a bit of good news for a change. What else have we got here? The Good Friday Agreement. Joe Biden and Bill Clinton to visit Northern Ireland. They were kind of off and on. Bill Clinton and Joe Biden have both said they will visit Northern Ireland. Clinton, at an international conference at Queen's University, gave details of Mr. Biden's visit, yet to be confirmed. The peace deal was signed on the 10th of April, way back there in 1998, and designed to bring an end to 3 decades of conflict in Northern Ireland, and it has. Still a problem with the Democratic Unionist Party, who I don't think really were... They took part, but I don't think they're overjoyed about it, and there's still no government in Northern Ireland, thanks to their belligerence. The current president said it was his intention to accept an invitation offered by Prime Minister Sunak on Monday. The two leaders were at Point Loma Naval Base in California to unveil details of that nuclear submarine deal with Australia. I look forward to our conversation and also, importantly, the budget in Northern Ireland, which hopefully you will be able to do so, and coming up the anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. I know it's something very special and personal to you. We'd love to have you come along. Mrs. Clinton is also going to be there. She is the Chancellor of the University at the Queen's University in Belfast. She says she would be delighted to host her husband at the event, which runs from the 17th to the 19th of April, not far away. There have been speculation that Mr. Biden will also attend. Well, he is. Key partner piece, the Deputy Leader of Sinn Féin for Northern Ireland, Michelle O'Neill, hailed the US as a key partner in peace in Ireland, which it is. It would not have been Bill Clinton and Tony Blair and Bertie Ahern, the Irish Prime Minister at the time. Democratic Unionist Party, second largest party, pulled out of the power agreement, power sharing agreement during last year, 2022, like I said, and protested about post-Brexit arrangements for Northern Ireland, known as the Northern Ireland Protocol, and yet they voted for the, you know, to get out of Brexit. Isn't it amazing? Their leader, Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, welcomed Mr. Biden's visit. He said progress in restoring power sharing would be made on the basis of solid foundations. Well, I think the American government is not threatened, but told them that, you know, there's no really agreement here. America will not be helping them in any way, any shape or form. If they were against it, they wanted to remain the Good Friday Agreement and bring peace and prosperity, basically, to the people of Northern Ireland. And they weren't interested in, you know, some politician just playing rookie or whatever. He says he knew he wants a framework deal to revise the protocol. Did not go far with, this is Mr. Donaldson, saying that the UK government needed to get more clarification and the DUP would not be pressured into a decision on the winds of a framework by arbitrary timelines. The Alliance Party member, Andrew Moore, said Mr. Biden's visit was an important and positive opportunity for Northern Ireland in the context of a restored and reformed Assembly and Executive. So it is good news if it comes off, but I think the Democratic Unionist Party seem to be going out of their way to make it difficult for a lot of these people. Anyway, what got, this is something, tree felling. Farmer defends tree felling amid squirrel concerns. You don't have squirrels in New Zealand, but they're quite common over in Europe. Farmer has defended his felling of thousands of trees on the banks of Londonderry's River Foyle amid criticism from a red squirrel conservation group. Tim McCall said the spice trees were planted in 1995 as a production crop and are now being replanted. But the Northwest Red Squirrel Group said their loss could have a serious impact on the squirrels' habitat. The area is one of the city's really good pockets of red squirrels. The 10-acre spread of trees was planted by Mr. McCall's father on the family farm close to Derry, the border between Derry and Donegal, and an area many locals refer to as the out of line. Red squirrels had reappeared in the area around 15 years ago, and Mr. McCall's said due diligence had been carried out before contractors cut the trees down. Contractor will do a pre-assessment to see if they will find any red squirrels. They haven't found any, and that is not to say that there aren't any. We are very aware that the red squirrel is a sort of protected species that we want to try to keep in the neighbourhood. You have to balance that against the fact that this is a production crop. Landowners have had to accept that they have to look after the nature of their land, which is true. I agree that you've got to look after it. We need to protect the squirrels. They are going to die out. There will be none left. Pine trees are ideal habitat for them. Interesting. She said a survey of squirrel numbers now needs to be carried out after the removal of the trees. Mr. McCall said he can understand the people are being a bit upset, but this is business. And that kind of says it all, really, doesn't it? And on that note, I'd like you to wish you, like I said, I hope you've had a great St. Patrick's Day and you enjoyed it, you know, a bit of crack and good humour, etc., etc. And on that note, I will love you and leave you and please be kind and take care, okay? Thank you very much. Catch you later. Bye.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.